For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's gone. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Portrait pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
On a Friday here in late August, Evan and Tiki. Tiki out today. You'll actually get to see him on TV, or maybe you won't. I think it's a local game. No, it's a national game. He's broadcasting a national preseason football game on Sunday on CBS. I would tell you what the game is, but I completely forgot. I have to be perfectly honest with you. Hold on. Let me look it up. Sunday. Oh, I know what it is. The Arizona Cardinals against the Denver Broncos on CBS. So if you're free on Sunday, you can watch our guy Tiki broadcasting Arizona against Denver. In fact, he interviewed Kyler Murray. So there'll be a lot of football this weekend to kind of whet your appetite for the real thing beginning. Now, one thing I am very, very curious about, Ian O'Connor, kind enough to be sitting in today. Ian, of course, is the author of the brand new book, Out of the Darkness, The Mystery of Aaron Rodgers. He's doing a Q&A tomorrow with my man Joe Beningo and Marty Lyons at Bookends in Ridgewood, New Jersey, 1 o'clock tomorrow, so check it out. But one thing, and I know we spent a lot of time talking about it, maybe too much time, was the idea that Aaron Rodgers was thinking about running for vice president with Robert F. Kennedy Jr. And what I had said on the air was, I could see it happening, and I think Aaron would try to do both. And it led to all these hypotheticals. Well, is he going to campaign during the year? How's it going to work? Can he do both? Well, it's timely to bring this up because RFK Jr. just announced he's dropping out. He's out of the race. So if Aaron Rodgers was RFK's running mate, this would be a big story right now to us in the sports world, because it would be like, wait a second. Did that guy just retire, if he was forced to run for vice president, and then his boss basically said, I'm out? Did that ever seriously come close to happening?
No, because Aaron was never choosing unemployment over employment. And even if he didn't drop out today and endorse Trump, Kennedy was going to get blown out in the election. It was going to be complete annihilation, and Aaron knew that. So why in the world would he give up a chance to win a Super Bowl with the Jets, a chance to dramatically enhance his legacy?
He couldn't have done both, because that was what I thought he was going to try to do.
I don't think there's any shot in hell he could have done both. And on the 1% chance that they won, then what does he do?
1%? You're being very kind.
I'm being very kind. Okay, so no, it was never going to happen. And I really think it was just a Kennedy publicity stunt.
Mm-hmm.
And it worked. He got more publicity for 2 weeks than anything else in his campaign. And now he's out. The problem is, because of that rumor that got leaked, and it was true, I think he did, they are friends, he did consider him for a little bit. Aaron was never going to do it. Then the CNN report hits about Sandy Hook,
and that
really hurt Aaron. He had to, he doesn't answer too many things publicly. He knew he had to answer that one.
Yeah.
And he issued his denial, although he didn't deny specifically saying it, and that hurt him. I mean, so Kennedy did him no favors by leaking that report. It was never happening. He was never giving up football for politics. I don't believe he's going to be a politician going forward. I think he'll be one of the greatest broadcasters ever.
You think so?
Yeah, he says he's not that interested or not interested at all, but I think that's the natural transition for him out of the game, because if you listen to him talk football,
He's amazing.
You may not like what he's saying about 99 other things, but when he's talking football, he's as good as I've ever heard. He's mesmerizing.
And I agree with you on that. And Tom Brady's about to begin his career as a broadcaster. I think Aaron Rodgers would be 10 times better. I really do. Because here's the difference between Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers, in my opinion. We'll see if Tom proves me wrong. I think Tom Brady is going to be very measured with everything he says. Everything he says, any criticism, any compliment, it's going to be measured. Aaron Rodgers doesn't give an F. And that's a part of, I guess, his charm to a lot of people. Certainly his charm to me at times. And I think if he was a broadcaster, he would just sit there and just talk football better than anybody. And be honest, I think he would actually be better at it than Tom Brady.
He is a fearless public speaker,
yes.
Aaron Rodgers. And I'm not, I don't know if you are.
A fearless public speaker? I don't want to get fired.
Yeah, exactly. He doesn't worry about getting fired.
That's true.
There are a lot of positions that he's defended that are probably indefensible.
Yes.
And so you look at it like, yeah, you probably shouldn't say that. And some of his friends told me that in my research for the book. They're like, Aaron has said things that were like, you know, the Jimmy Kimmel thing. Come on, Aaron. You know, why? It wasn't necessary. We know you're a good guy. We've seen your acts of kindness and generosity behind the scenes. And yet you're getting killed in public. And there are a lot of self-inflicted wounds here. And actually, one friend told me, he's very interesting. He said, you know, I used to worry about these things. And then I realized, Aaron's not worried about it. Why am I worried about
it? Right. He doesn't care.
Yeah. And I said, so he said, I stopped worrying about it. So let him be who he is. And so, but yeah, some of his friends are very frustrated by his own words at times because they know he's a good guy.
Did you dive deep into a lot of his thoughts on the world and conspiracy theories and whatnot?
In the book, listen, after that Sandy Hook report hit, I had to try to reach out to him, and he released his statement, and
right.
I asked some of his friends, had you ever heard this? Now, they said no, but of course, they realized if they said yes, that would be a very bad thing for their friend. So I don't know. He obviously is a conspiracy theorist. It goes back to high school when he studied the JFK assassination as a sophomore. He became fascinated by that. Thought it was a conspiracy. I think a lot of Americans do. So that's
yeah,
certainly not
that's one of those accepted ones.
Exactly.
Now.
UFOs, yeah. I don't even know if that's a conspiracy. That's just a belief.
That's reality.
And I actually believe in UFOs. I don't know. That's not a crazy one. But he's got one. Like, he looked at Operation Northwoods, which did happen in the 1960s. The Joint Chiefs of Staff did hatch a plan to have American military attack American military and civilian targets, blame it on Cuba as justification to start a war with Cuba and Castro. And President Kennedy nixed it, thankfully, but Aaron is fascinated by that, and he thinks there's an Operation Northwoods behind a lot of things now, and where, of course, it doesn't really exist. So, hey, some conspiracies, some, are proven true.
Yeah, did he, because the only time he's ever been connected to this one was Deshaun Kizer on a podcast said Aaron Rodgers once told him you should do more research on 9/11. So it didn't necessarily imply he believes in 9/11 conspiracies, but he did say to Kizer, that's what Kizer claimed.
I reached out to Kizer a couple of times and just couldn't, I didn't get a response. I wanted to have him talk me through it because Aaron's never said that.
Right, no, I know, and that's why I've always been curious.
He's never really commented on it, so I wanted to get more from him first before asking Aaron about it, and I didn't. But I do know that, like, talking to Thomas Morstead, the great punter, who said when he joined the Jets, from afar when he was on the Saints, he didn't like Rodgers. He goes, just the way he presented himself in the media, or at least the way the media covered him, I did not like him.
Right.
And then once I became his teammate, I was like, yeah, I like this guy a lot. And they were on opposite sides of the collective bargaining agreement, but he really came to like Rodgers. And he said, Aaron would talk about historical events. I'm not going to tell you what they are. But he said he made me revisit some things, and then I went back and read up, and I was like, well, maybe he's got a point on this one. He wouldn't tell me. I don't know if it was 9/11 or not. But no, he is a legitimate conspiracy theorist. But if he has 7 theories right now, one or two of them might be true. The other 5 are nuts.
Yeah, that's usually the way the conspiracy theories work. Like, there's 10 of them. 8 of them may be nuts. They sound crazy. And then there's 1 or 2 that turn out to actually be true.
Exactly.
And you're like, damn it, I got fooled all these years. Let's go to Larry calling from Long Island. How are you doing today, Larry? Larry.
Excellent.
Good. What's up?
So you guys said a real sports fan wouldn't leave his seat during an important game. But it saved my marriage.
Saved your marriage?
And I have a funny story about it.
Yeah, tell us.
In 1993, I was working in Pennsylvania, and my wife was in New York. We're newly married, and we got tickets given to us for the World Series of the Phillies against Toronto.
Right.
We meet in the airport, and we go to the stadium, and we get there, and the tickets that she's been given were for the wrong night.
Oh, my God.
So we've flown in from 2 different cities. We have no tickets. And I said, come on, honey, I'll take you out for a nice dinner. She says, we're going into the game. She goes into the stadium and talks us in with tickets to the wrong night.
Wow.
We had game 3 tickets. It was game 4. Anyway, we sit down. We're there. We have great seats right next to Fregosi's wife, who was the manager. And it's the 3rd inning, and she says, I really want some Cracker Jacks. So I get up, and I go, and I get her Cracker Jacks, and there's a long line.
Oh, boy.
So I two innings of the World Series, but I come back a hero with Cracker Jacks. And it probably saved my marriage, which is intact 30 years later.
Well, I have two questions. Number one, I forget, because Phillies Blue Jays, like one of my first early World Series to remember. Were you at the game that was 15-14 or 16-15? Was it that game or was it one of the other games?
No, it was not. It was not a super high-scoring game. Okay. And honestly, I don't remember, but it was not that game.
Okay. Here's the other difference between you being such a superhero, which I respect. You sound like a mensch. And you went there and you waited and you got the Cracker Jacks. You couldn't give a rat's ass about that World Series. So it's easy for you to do that. If it's a game you care about, like you're passionate about, then it isn't as easy. Like, I remember, to keep it to the Jets, being with Beningo for Jets-Chargers out in California. It was the first year of the Rex Ryan run that they went on.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so divisional round. They shocked the Chargers that year, and they go to the AFC title game. They subsequently lost to Indianapolis. I had to go to the bathroom mid-second quarter. Had to go to the bathroom. It happens. You know, nature calls. So there's a timeout. I quickly look at the men's room. There's a long line. I said, no way. This is no way. I'm not missing the rest of the second quarter to go to the bathroom. I wait to halftime. The line in halftime was like the longest line I've ever seen. Same thing. I'm sorry. I'm not going to miss this game to go to the bathroom. I held in for 3.5 quarters, one of the worst urges to go to the bathroom in the history of mankind. And I did it because I could not miss a play of a Jet Charger playoff game. And you know what? My bladder still hasn't recovered. And I have no regrets. I'm a loser. No regret, because how can you miss anything of an important game? So that guy's story, nice story, cute story, wonderful story, it was of a World Series game he didn't give a rat's ass about.
Well, that's the beauty of watching these games in press boxes where there are bathrooms and not long lines like that. But I did cover a Belmont Stakes,
right?
And women invaded the men's room because the line for the ladies' room was a mile long in the men's room, and they actually, about 20 women came in, all dressed up to the nines, like they were at the Kentucky Derby, basically, and we were laughing, but it was an invasion of the men's room. And I've never seen anything like it, but it was a fun time. When you're sitting in a temperature-controlled press box, you don't have these concerns.
Yeah.
I'm surprised you're not in them more often, because I never see. You're a fan.
Nah.
And you could get into press boxes if you want, but is that something you decided long ago that
yes.
I'm a fan and I'm staying a fan?
Yeah, so what happened was early on, I was like, this is awesome. Like, there's a bathroom, it's air conditioned, this is great. And I would go to press boxes, probably like the first 2 or 3 years I was doing midday shows. But I realized, like, I didn't have the proper etiquette, which is you can't cheer, you can't root, you can't curse a guy out when they don't perform well. And I realized, while I respect this, and this is really fun in its own way, this isn't for me. So I avoid press boxes at all costs. Nothing personally against you or anyone like you, but I want to be me. I want to sit there and be a fan. I want to be a pig. I want to buy a hot dog. I want to have mustard all over my shirt and not have it be a problem.
I'm a loser.
I want to curse out a relief pitcher if they give up a horrible 2-2 pitch right down the middle for a home run. Not that I'm a big cursor, but I want to at least have the option to do it. But you're right. You don't, like, as I was telling that story about the bladder issue, you've never experienced that.
No. No. But, you know, you've experienced so much pain as a Jet fan and as a Met fan that the amount of times you're inspired to curse or want to curse is, you know, it's all the time, right?
Yeah, it's a lot. So often.
Right. It's not like you've been a Yankees fan or a New England Patriots fan in recent years, so you didn't have to curse that often.
Correct.
So if you're in a press box, you're trapped, and your instinct is muted because you can't curse. And, yeah, if you're a Jet fan and a Met fan, but maybe this year will be different, at least on the Jets end of it.
We'll see, man.
You won't do a lot of cursing.
Well, there's always a lot.
Where were you on the night of 9/11 when Aaron got hurt? Were you in the stands? Or?
Bro, so that night I went home. I was thinking about going to the game, but I wanted to be with my oldest son. I wanted to show him a chance to see, like, the beginning of something special. So I went home. I got to the game live because sometimes I got a DVR and started a little bit late because of our hours. And so I'll never forget. I was sitting in the bedroom. I got my oldest son, Jet, with me. Yes, his name is Jet. What a coincidence. And I say, this is Aaron Rodgers. And he's like, oh, okay. And he's like, Dad. I said, what's up, Jet? He's like, I think he's going to get hurt. And I said, why would you say that? Like, well, why would you say that? And he's like, well, he's old. And I'm like, well, let's hope that doesn't happen, son. Like, okay, what a great way to start this new era. And obviously, four plays later, he goes down. And as he goes down, Jet says, yeah, I told you, Dad. I'm like, no, you told me. And he's like, is he going to be okay? I said, I don't know. So all I could think about is my son being prophetic about how he's old, he's going to get hurt, and then he promptly got hurt.
Well, actually,
it's a very special moment, Ian. Very special.
Well, he's right, and it worked out that way. And I remember in the parking lot with his Aaron's parents and talking. It was raining, so we were sitting in my car waiting for the storms to pass. And
this is prior to the game.
Prior to the game,
okay.
Right? And we're sitting there, and I remember driving in saying, listen, this isn't Lambeau Field. MetLife is not exactly aesthetically pleasing. So
way to be nice.
Yeah. But anyway.
It's a dump, Mrs. Rogers.
Exactly. So she was, I asked them, do you get nervous, even though you haven't talked to your son in a long time, do you still get nervous before games? And Ed gave his answer, yeah, basically I do. It's tough before big games. I still have a hard time sleeping. And then Darla, his mother, said, you know, when you're the quarterback, you have a target on your back. The entire defense is after you. So I am nervous. I'm always concerned he's going to get hurt. And then four snaps in, he's out for the year.
How did you get to the position of driving them to this game?
Ed emailed me or texted me, I forget, and asked for transportation options from, they were staying at an Airbnb in Montclair, so not far from where Aaron lives. And I said, okay, here's the Uber price. Here's NJ Transit schedule through Secaucus Junction. But if you're stuck and you need a ride, I have a parking pass. I'll give you a ride. And then a couple of days later, he emailed back and said, we'll take you up on your offer.
Oh, wow.
So I bought them sandwiches and tried to be a really good Jersey guy, hospitality and all that. And, you know, New Jerseyans get a bad rap, I think, nationally. So wanted to show them that there is hospitality in the Garden State, and took them on a nice drive into the Meadowlands. And it was raining. It was apocalyptic looking for a while there that night in the hours leading into that game. I remember his mother looking out at, there was a billboard, an advertisement with Aaron, I think for Zenith Watches, and she was straining to see if it was him. And I remember thinking, as a parent, just how strange it is and how difficult it would be to not be able to communicate with your child. But they were revved up. They had Jets gear on, and they got into that game. And as I told you, on the ride home, she admitted, she said, in the third quarter, we were able to put that injury temporarily aside, as devastating as it was. And that crowd was so electric late in that game. She said, we became Jets fans. We were cheering. They didn't know who we were. And then when we won, it was a great thing. Yeah. And actually, on the drive home, I had Bob Wischusen's call. Bob did a great job on that walk-off call.
That was a tremendous call
it
by
was.
Bob. Yep.
And they listened to it, and they really liked it. They were uplifted by that call, and that was a tough drive. I was quiet. I turned myself into an Uber driver, and I didn't speak unless they spoke to me. I let them sit in their silence a little bit, and yeah, it was a very difficult night.
It was a very surreal night, because I remember, obviously, very different perspective than his parents. As a Jet fan, having such incredible mixed emotions, I was pumped by the win. I mean, it was an incredible victory, but also depressed by what I know just happened to Rodgers. Let me ask you, because the book, by the way, is Out of the Darkness, The Mystery of Aaron Rodgers. And we probably, Tiki and I have to have you back, by the way, at one point, and do like a full interview about the
book. Absolutely, great.
I'm about halfway through. I've very much enjoyed it. And I haven't gotten to this part. And I'm sure there are a lot of people listening who are thinking to themselves, so what's the deal? Why was Aaron Rodgers estranged from his parents? So what's the deal?
I mean, there's like 17 different reasons.
Really?
And everybody's
it's that
looking
complicated?
For one. Yeah. And I went into the project thinking there was one defined reason.
Yeah.
And there's Olivia Munn, and the parents blame her, and he hasn't dated her in 7 years. So obviously it's more than that. And she really confirmed feelings he already had about his family, not fully appreciating his generosity. He was very generous with family members. And they don't see it the same way, but it's his perception that's driving the whole thing. So, and that the family too much was revolving around his fame and success. And Olivia agreed with that. And one relative who's estranged from him also told me that he found a comrade in Olivia. She confirmed his thoughts, and that was her role in it. But she wasn't really driving that train either. So afterward, he was really upset at Jordan, his younger brother, good quarterback at Vanderbilt, who went on The Bachelorette and talked about the estrangement. And they filmed the scene at the dinner table where they had two empty chairs, signifying the absence of Aaron and Olivia. Aaron told me, I wasn't even invited to that. Oh. If you're going to do that to me, at least have an invitation. I probably wouldn't have gone, but at least invite me to the...
Yeah.
So there were a lot of things like that seemed kind of petty to me. He was upset with his older brother for a couple of things, and Aaron didn't go to a wedding. They were upset about it. And I'm like, man, this doesn't add up to a 10-year estrangement. And there were a couple things about it he said he would not talk about for public consumption on the record. So, listen, I have a hopeful scene. I know you probably heard. I've talked about it a lot in the last couple of weeks. He hugged his dad last year at Lake Tahoe at the golf tournament, the celebrity golf tournament. He plays in right before Jets camp. And he saw his dad in the crowd, and Ed put himself there for that reason, to be seen. And Aaron decided, should I ignore him? No, today's the day. So he walks over there, and Ed was looking the other way, turns around, and Aaron's standing 15, 20 feet away looking at him. And Ed Rogers said, I froze because I just forgot what it felt like to have my son look at me. Mm. It's been 9 years. So they hugged. They said, I love you. It meant a lot to them, even though it was only 30 seconds. And they both said in the book, they want to have a relationship now. So now that Aaron has said that publicly, which he's never said before since the estrangement in 2014 started, hopefully that creates something here. That my hope was, just as a human being, not an author, because I'm not supposed to get involved, that the book somehow, in a strange way, will help. Hmm. Because the way it was going, I think it was going to linger forever.
Right.
So maybe this blows up the dynamic a little bit, that it's out in public. I hope so. I really hope it didn't hurt the process. So we'll see how it plays out.
Do they still live in Northern California?
Yeah, they're in Chico, California, where Aaron grew up. Yeah.
You know why that's perfect? Week one's in San Francisco. So it's a nice little easy trip. They won't even need you as an Uber driver. They can head on over, and hopefully Aaron wins, and the family is back together. Let's get back to your calls. Toll-free number is 888-808-1019. We'll get a lot into the Yankees and Mets coming up as they get set to continue their big weekends. The Mets off to a great start last night as they beat up the San Diego Padres, breaking the game open late. Let's go to Stan in West Orange, New Jersey. What's up, Stan?
Hey, guys. What's happening? Happy weekend, by the way.
Thank you. You too.
Hey, just getting on this preseason stuff and something that you guys may not even be aware of.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, they should have one preseason game. Okay? They, like you said, with the comp stuff, it's great. I think that the Super Bowl should be played on presidential weekend. And everything's about the money, and I just want to go back in time if I could. Do you guys remember the fact that there used to be the NFL champions playing an all-star team of college players?
Yeah. I don't remember it, but I remember reading about it, which is crazy. Didn't Otto Graham basically coach? I think Otto Graham, the legendary Otto Graham, would coach the kids that would take on the NFL champion, something like that.
Otto Graham, if you go back and look at him, he looks like a current player. He's athletic.
Yeah.
So he's one guy that you could put in today's game, I think, and play. But I don't remember that. That's not in my book.
I don't remember it either. It's one of those things I've read about. It's like saying, do you remember Abe Lincoln as president? No, but I know he won in 1860. It was a very, very controversial election.
Wasn't there a consolation game, too?
Yes.
So, I think Lombardi and the Packers once played in that game.
Well, I think Vince Lombardi called it the loser bowl.
Yeah.
And the losing teams in the championship game would then play each other. There were a lot of really dumb ideas in the 60s. You know, my parents and a lot of older people talk about the 60s being amazing. I don't know how amazing it was. I mean, first of all, there were a bunch of assassinations. That's number one. Number two, there was a very controversial war. Number three, there was a lot of racial inequality. And number four, they had the loser bowl. Like, it was not exactly the greatest idea in the world.
The Packers were a great thing of the 60s. And if I can plug my high school, Vince Lombardi coached at my high school, St. Cecilia's in Englewood, New Jersey. So I lived on Ivy Lane in Englewood. Vince Lombardi lived 8 houses away. And so that was always a reason why I was fascinated by the Packer mystique. Even though I grew up a Dallas Cowboys fan, I was in Vince Lombardi's church praying for the Dallas Cowboys as a kid, which was an odd thing. But that was another reason why I turned to this book, because I wanted to do a Packers book because of the Lombardi legacy at my high school.
Oh.
And Aaron being traded to the Jets sort of gave me a reason to do it.
Now, speaking of Packers legacy, Brett Favre was asked a question about your book and his relationship with Aaron Rodgers. And when we come back, we'll take a listen to what Brett had to say, and we'll let the author of said book, Ian O'Connor, respond to what Brett had to say.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Yankees get set to open up a series against the very crappy Colorado Rockies. We'll see if they can take advantage of that. Big win by the Metsies last night. Huge win. They build an early lead. Sevy battles his way through five, and then the bullpen, marvelous. Bullpen did an outstanding job, except for Waskar Brazoban, who tried to make things interesting in the bottom of the ninth inning. But great start to the West Coast trip for the Mets with a victory last night. Now, Ian, you wrote this great book about Aaron Rodgers.
Thank you.
There are a lot of things that before I even started reading or listening to the book, because I'm doing the audiobook, that I was intrigued by. One of which that I couldn't wait to hear about was Rodgers and Favre. Like, it's just fascinating. And so I'm up to that point, and like, here's the way I would describe it. This is me, the reader slash listener, you then as the author, and then we'll hear from that piece of crap, Brett Favre. I say that with love, Brett, because, you know, I really love you. It sounded like Brett Favre was not happy that Aaron Rodgers was drafted and treated Aaron Rodgers like a guy who he really didn't want around as a rookie. He didn't put his arm around him. He didn't hug him. He didn't say, ah, don't worry, kid. I'm going to teach you about the next level. And so it sounded like Brett treated Aaron poorly his rookie year. It sounded as if the relationship got a little bit better in year two and three. And there may have been a respect for each other, but didn't ever sound like they were best of friends. And then obviously when Brett Favre is trying to invade and come back, that obviously did not make Aaron Rodgers happy. Is that a fair interpretation of what you published?
Yeah, it is. And it's funny because now they have a pretty good relationship. It's true now what Brett Favre said, that they get along because they have a shared bond, because Aaron Rodgers experienced the pain that Brett Favre felt in 2008 when he was kicked out the door, because the same thing happened to him in favor of Jordan Love. But I know when Rodgers was drafted, and of course he fell into Green Bay's lap at 24. He was supposed to go first a week or two before the draft, and then the plunge happens. Favre's agent, Buss Cook, when Rodgers was drafted, texted Andrew Brandt in the Packers front office, what the bleep? Okay. So when Jordan Love was drafted, and of course they moved up to get Love, so that was a different
scenario. Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Aaron Rodgers texted a friend the same three words, what the bleep? So I asked Aaron, when I sat with him at his home in Malibu, I said, I heard this anecdote. Is this true? He said, yeah. And I said other things too. So that was kind of funny. But yeah, it was not good. And I remember Dylan Tomlinson was a very good reporter with, I believe, Gannett in Wisconsin. And he went out and visited Aaron Rodgers in Chico, California after the draft. And they're having lunch, and Aaron says to him, how do you think Brett's going to treat me? And Dylan knew. He said, yeah, Brett Favre's not teaching anybody anything. He said, Aaron, I have to tell you, I don't think this is going to go well for you. And so, okay, so then there's training camp. Training camp happens, and at the end of camp, Aaron goes over to Dylan Tomlinson, taps him on the shoulder, and he says, you were right. And yeah, so there was, I'm sure Brett, I can understand his perspective. I'm a Hall of Famer. I've done so much for this franchise. Actually, Brett Favre made the Green Bay Packers the Green Bay Packers again. They had those down years after the glory years of Lombardi and Starr, and he brought them back to glory. And now they're hiring his replacement. And his agent, Buss Cook, at some point texted Andrew Brandt again later on and said, Andrew, do you know what it's like to have your replacement sit next to you every day at work? And Andrew said, no, I don't. He said, yeah, it bleeping sucks. And that's how Brett Favre felt. My replacement, yeah, I have to sit next to every day. So I do understand his perspective, but he was a little or a lot mean-spirited about it. And it affected Aaron. He told his parents and he told friends that, yeah, I'm getting iced out of trips. And when the guys are getting together, Brett's arranging, I'm not part of it. And there were pranks and a lot of those things. So Brett saying that the relationship then was great in 2005 is not a narrative that anyone else is advancing.
Yes. Well, here is Brett Favre being asked about that. Zach Gelb interviewed him the other day and said, hey, Brett, the relationship between you and Aaron Rodgers doesn't sound very good. What do you say?
Did Aaron say these words?
Aaron's father and a few other teammates.
That's news to me. But I felt like we had a great relationship. We watched a lot of film together. And, you know, we didn't hang out. I was quite a bit older than him. I went home to Deanna and the girls. We played golf together.
Oh, good. You played golf together. Brett Favre, to me, has no credibility. Brett Favre, when he was here in New York, decided to take a picture of his genitalia and text it to a woman that worked for the New York Jets. That's mm-hmm. Brett Favre, ladies and gentlemen. That's who he is. And I know he's been involved in a lot of other things that involve some pretty serious accusations against him involving money. But Brett Favre playing dumb about his relationship with Aaron Rodgers doesn't really surprise me. Or I'm not surprised.
They were at that function. Was it the ESPYs? I have the scene in my book where the big deal was made about them appearing together on stage. And actually, would they shake hands? So what, that never happened? I mean, the whole premise of that scene was that they couldn't stand each other, at least for a period of time. Now, that's changed. Now, their relationship, I wouldn't say is great, but it is solid. And they have a shared bond over being kicked out of Green Bay after doing so much for that organization. But they did not have any bond in 2005. 2006, it got a little better. 2007, I think Aaron won him over to some degree. But Aaron's moment when he told Packer management that I'm the guy was 2007 against the Dallas Cowboys. Brett got hurt early. Aaron went in and played really good football. Mm. Brady Papinga, who was a linebacker on that team, told me that during the game when Aaron started, not lighting it up, but he was looking good, he went up to Brett and said, you taught him too good. and he said, Brett was shook his head. He said, it's not over yet, Brady, and walked away. And he said Brett treated him like an annoying little brother and then some. And so that was the state of their relationship back then.
It is such a unique situation because nowhere else in the world, I guess, will they tell you, hey, you're being replaced by that guy. Go train him to replace you.
Yeah, that's understandable. You wouldn't like it. I wouldn't like
it. No.
And it's also, too, when you leave a job or get fired from a job, if I'm a columnist and I get bounced out of there, do I want the next guy to win a Pulitzer? No. I don't want that. I don't wish that person ill will, but I don't want a Pulitzer right behind me. So that's what he was feeling. And listen, at the end of the day, I think Aaron Rodgers was a better quarterback than Brett Favre.
Oh, I completely agree with you. And I'm not saying that with any bias because Aaron's done nothing for the Jets. But I think, look, Brett Favre is a Hall of Famer. Brett Favre was a great quarterback. Let me get that out of the way as a Hall of Famer. But boy, did Brett Favre know how to find the open cornerback. Boy, did Brett Favre know how to throw that huge gut punch interception. And you know who knows that better than anybody? Giant fans. Because Corey Webster in overtime, that's like the defining moment of that game, besides Tom Coughlin's cheeks. So Brett was a great player, but my God, did he know how to throw that back-breaking, brutal interception. That's the way I look at him.
He did, and he did it with Minnesota, too.
Yes, he did. Right. And so glad that happened.
Cost them a Super Bowl appearance. And people forget the Giants had a major role in Aaron Rodgers' postseason career by derailing it.
15-1 year. Yep.
That's right. Yep. So everyone thought they would two-peat, and they were defending champs. They were 15-1, dominating the league. People talking about Aaron winning 3 championships in 4 years like Brady did. And all of a sudden, at 15-1, the Giants went in there at 9-7, coming off, who did they beat that year? Tampa in the first round.
Mm-hmm.
And they go into Lambeau.
Atlanta that year. That was the one home game at MetLife Stadium in the postseason.
That's right.
It was that game.
In the 07 run, they beat Tampa.
Yeah, there you go. Yep.
So they go into Lambeau, and unfortunately, I hate to even bring this up, but the Packers were dealing with tragedy that week. Joe Philbin, the offensive coordinator, his son drowned in a river. And players not only were close to Joe Philbin, but knew the son, too.
Sure.
I do think that had an impact on that game. I do hate to bring that up, but it was a factor without question. But the Giants were just so opportunistic with Eli, and we know how the rest of that run went for the Giants. But Aaron's postseason career ever since has been an entirely different story because he won 4 of his first 5 postseason starts, including the Super Bowl, and he was a fearless playoff player back then. He hasn't been in recent years. I think the Jets are going to need that if they get into the tournament. I think they will, and I think he's got to let it rip. And he needs Breece Hall. You know, he needs Breece Hall like John Elway needed Terrell Davis at the end of his career. Now, I'm not saying Breece Hall is going to be as good as Terrell Davis, but I do think that during the course of the season anyway, Aaron can't carry the team every week.
Speaking of Breece Hall, if you look behind you, if you look over your left shoulder, you'll see this beautiful picture of Tiki Barber dressed in a Breece Hall Jets jersey. And it's actually autographed to him from Breece Hall. who says, to Tiki, from your favorite Jet, Breece Hall. So I think that'll bring us all the luck. A legendary New York Giant showing such admiration and love for a soon-to-be legendary New York Jet. So I believe that beautiful picture here in the WFAN studios, that is going to bring all the luck we need to Breece Hall. That's the jersey I'm wearing to tomorrow night's preseason game.
Tiki's favorite Jet is Nate Hackett.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's his favorite person with the Jets.
Yes.
But his favorite football player, that's Breece Hall. We'll get your calls. We're getting a lot of baseball coming up as well, including getting you set for the big weekend. And my, what I don't like to brag, but my brilliant Old Timers Day idea that will save Old Timers Day. But let's go to, oh, this guy's got a book idea for you. Let's hear this. Paul in Fort Lee's got a book idea for Ian O'Connor. What do you got, Paul?
Hey, good afternoon. First time having... A great fan of the show.
Thanks for calling.
Real quick, before I get to Ian's book idea, do your sons play baseball?
Yes, my oldest son is playing baseball. My youngest son is still learning. He's only three.
How old? I have a three-year-old, too. Nice. How old was your oldest son when he started swinging the bat?
I would say probably right around that age, 3 years old. That's how my youngest is starting to swing the bat, too. So I'd say right around three, probably.
My son's a big Aaron Judge fan.
Nice.
I gotta get him to stop throwing the bat after he hits the ball off the tee. Holy cow! It drives me crazy.
I understand. I understand.
Yeah, hey, Ian. Yes, my lovely wife and I got married at St. Cecilia's Church.
It's a beautiful church. 2nd, no question about that.
It is beautiful. Hey, did you know Father Dan O'Neill?
I knew Father Tim Moore, who hired Vince Lombardi. Believe it or not, that's how old I am. Yeah, but I knew O'Brien, Joe O'Brien at St. Cecilia's, but those are the two guys I knew.
Oh, all right, very good. So for your book idea, I think you should do an investigation into the untimely death of Sven, the penguin in Australia that passed away.
Investigative reporting from Ian O'Connor.
I think I'll let Evan handle that one. But thanks.
That's funny. Let's go to Joe in Jersey City. What's up, Joe?
Hey, Evan, what's going on?
How are you, Joe?
What's up, man?
Good. So back to the Jeter Judge conversation. So just give me a minute here. The thing that people have to think about is that greatness and is also about emotion and realizing that emotion.
Mm-hmm.
And even if Judge hits 500, 600, 700 home runs, and he only has the one championship, the only way he'll be on the same level as Jeter, what Jeter gave is some signature moments. So remember, so Jeter had the Jeffrey Mayer home run. He had the flip.
Mm-hmm.
He had Mr. November, and he had to dive into the stands. So those are four moments, signature moments that people remember and feel emotional about that makes them remember how great Jeter was. If Judge never has any signature moments, even though three of those never led champion, they weren't even in championship years, the last three, Judge will never be on a level as Jeter because he never gave those signature moments. So that's what he really needs to be on that level. If he's only going to have one championship,
right,
the only way he's going to get on that level to be Jeter is to give us signature moments that people remember and remember fondly.
I look at it this way. If the Yankees win the World Series this year or next year, like you have to win so many postseason games to do it nowadays. Even if you win the division and you skip this wild card series, you got to win three in the divisional, four in the LCS, four in the World Series. Like Jeter, you got to win 11 games. My attitude is, if they're going to win a World Series, it's very likely Aaron Judge will supply numerous signature moments during that process. Yeah, like, it would be tough to win without Aaron Judge being the Aaron Judge that's having this historical MVP season.
Unless Soto does it. Long-term, I mean, that could happen where it's more him than Aaron Judge, but unlikely. And I think, listen, there's a lot of golf to be played here in Aaron Judge's career. And he's going to get a lot of postseason opportunities. And the numbers are what they are. He can't run away from them. They're not very good. He is capable of better than what he's shown in the postseason, without question. And I think he will deliver that.
Yeah, I used to say this about Barry Bonds years and years ago. And I know that Barry had steroids, so people like to kind of minimize his accomplishments late, saying, he was juiced up. But I remember thinking in the late 90s, mid-90s, when he was with Pittsburgh, when he was with San Francisco, if you give a great player enough opportunities to show their greatness, they're going to show it. Like, Barry Bonds is eventually going to have a big postseason. Because remember, that was his big bugaboo. He always stunk in the postseason. He always came up small, whether it was John Franco striking him out in 2000. And eventually in 2002, yes, he was juiced up. You couldn't get him out. Eventually it was going to happen. Same with A-Rod. So I think if you're that great and you're there every year, eventually you're going to show your greatness.
Yeah, and I covered that World Series and some of that playoff run. And I wrote a column for USA Today at the start of that series because you could not throw him a strike.
Right.
You threw a strike to him. It was getting ripped somewhere. It might get caught, but he was hitting a laser. And I wrote a column saying, I don't want, just for this World Series, I don't want to talk about steroids. I don't want to write about steroids. I don't want to hear about steroids. I want to know what it felt like to cover Babe Ruth in the World Series. And I'm getting that opportunity right now because you cannot throw Babe Ruth a strike and you cannot throw this guy a strike without some damage being done. And that's how I looked at that World Series. I didn't want to think about steroids. And I wanted to enjoy covering an unbelievable talent in the World Series, like Babe Ruth was.
Well, it's so funny. So a lot of people over the last couple of weeks and months have said, and I totally get it, hey, Aaron Judge is the greatest player I've ever seen. I've heard a lot of people say that to me. And my response is always, Barry Bonds is the greatest player I've ever seen. And sure. I can't unsee what I saw. Just because, yes, I know he was on steroids. Yes, I know he used the cream and whatever else. I can't unsee what I saw. I can't unsee Barry Bonds' true incredible greatness. That's why, despite him being a quote-unquote cheater, he's going to be the greatest player I've ever seen, no matter what you tell me, because I saw it. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I can't unsee it and then say, well, that doesn't count. Like, what you saw, not real. He was cheating. You got to eliminate that from your memory. You can never eliminate it from your memory.
And I'm not going to absolve him of guilt in that. And he certainly took PEDs. But I really do believe the reason he did it was because he saw two inferior players getting so much attention and praise in Sosa and Maguire that he said, I know I'm better than these guys, yep, and I know what those guys are doing, so I'm going to do it too. And again, I'm not absolving him because you're not supposed to do things that are against the rules, and he did. But you're right. We saw him do what he did, and it was amazing, and it's kind of hard to look at it and say, that's a bad thing. Because it was just so incredible to watch. And I do remember that World Series being locked in. It's like, and after I wrote that column in USA Today, I'm in the Giants clubhouse afterward, and Barry Bonds could be a very forbidding presence. Mm. And across the way, he was looking at me. I don't know. It was a benign look. And I almost wondered if he read it. It was in USA Today, so they got it. And maybe wanted to say something. He never did, and I didn't approach him. But, yeah, it was amazing to watch that man at work, and I'll never forget it.
He never won a World Series, but during that run that you talked about, he showed you his greatness.
He sure did.
He gave you those, like, wow kind of moments. Nick in the Bronx. How you doing, Nick?
Hey, how's it going?
Good, man. What's up?
Pretty good. I don't know if you remember. I was the one that you, when you were debating to take a 50-yard line seat in the second row or the first row in the 20-yard line.
Yes, I ended up making a decision, and I will be going to my seat for the very first time in MetLife Stadium tomorrow night.
You told me you decided on the second row, and then I broke your chop saying I was in the first row on the 50.
Yes.
But the other day you were talking about dropping your wife and kids off at the mall, and you were going to go over to the game, the Denver game.
Yeah, like I could use American, whatever the hell that place is called.
American
Dream is a buffer, yeah.
Right. I got an easy way for you to do it if you do decide to do it. The D parking lot, that, you know, the bridge that goes across the highway?
Yeah.
That's the D lot. If you park down by the D2 pole in the parking lot, there's a set of stairs that take you up to that bridge. Mm-hmm. You can walk them across the bridge. It takes you to the second floor, and then you go right into the mall. So if they get done early, give your wife an extra set of keys. She can walk right back that way, throw a cooler or some stuff in there for the kids, and she can sit down by the car with a folding chair, and she can hang out and wait for you to come out.
Have you done this already? Do you have experience with this, Nick?
Well, I normally tailgate in a D3 lot. So in the D3 lot, instead of crossing the road, we always used to go up those stairs. We were by the D3 pole. So you walk down to D2, you go up the stairs, and then you shoot right over the bridge. It's like a quarter of the way down. You're right in front of the gate. I'm going to be there tomorrow.
Oh, nice.
So
all right.
Maybe I'll come over. No, you're going to be with your family. I don't want to bother you.
That's very sweet of you.
I'm not going to bother you.
I noticed you didn't say to him, no, bother me. Come on over.
No, what I'm with my, you know why? Look, anybody can come over, of course.
You are an approachable dude.
I think I'm an approachable guy. Definitely. Anybody could come over and say hi. People are usually very nice, of course. I just know when I'm with both of my sons, there's never a moment of like, you're just sitting there. There's always going to be, dad, can you get this, dad. And some of them are questions, which I love. Like, dad, why is that a first down? Dad, why is that red marker over there? Dad, blah, blah, blah. So you can come over. There's just a chance I may not have any time to talk to you. That's the reality because I'm putting my kids first, man. This is the first time I'm taking my youngest to a football game and the first time I'm ever taking my wife to a football game. I have never taken my wife to a football game, yeah. Because in general, I've enjoyed watching at home. I prefer the NFL product at home on TV. It's the one sport I feel that way about. Baseball, love going to games. Prefer being at the game.
Is basketball, it a weather thing or is it fan unruliness? Is it
Nope. Neither. It's all about replay. It's all about access to 80 different angles right after. And at games, and I know people tell me they've gotten better with what they show on the scoreboard, but I feel like so many times when I'm at a football game, and I'm going to test myself this year because I'm going to go to a bunch, I feel like I'm checking my phone to see the replay of a play that just happened, and then I'm missing the following play. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I mean, football is the ultimate sport to, particularly in the winter, to watch on TV with TV technology the way it is.
Oh, yeah.
It's just hard to give that up.
Yes.
Plus, you're 70 degrees in your den, and it's hard to beat that.
Yeah.
You got all the replays and the screen that makes you feel like you're in the stands, and yeah, that's hard to walk away from that.
Very, very difficult.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Northsides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Nor taste combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit nor.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's gone. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Portrait pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.